Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Based on that opening montage, we have a new Saint in town. Saint Bregman, your time is over. It's Saint Diggs, the newest Patriots wide receiver, Hall of Famer. Got a montage like you read about and hear about on the radio. The Patriots are a better football team, Nick Fitzy Stevens, than when we left this show at 6 p.m. yesterday. How much better? How much value they got? Are there any downsides to the addition of Stephon Diggs? We're going to get into all of that here on WEEI Afternoons. It is a decent Wednesday afternoon in Boston, and we are locked and loaded for a massive program today. Not only are we going to be talking about Stephon Diggs, not only will Ted Johnson join us at 3 for our three-point stances, Tom Curran gets bumped up a day to 3:30. We will talk to Brian Scalabrine from the West Coast somewhere about the Boston Celtics, Jason Tatum, about flagrant fouls and such. But at 2:30, we will kick off the baseball season, baby, here on WEEI Afternoons. Alex Cora, the manager of the Fitzy, dare I say, World Series-bound Boston Red Sox?
No hyperbole detected.
The manager of the World Series-bound Boston Red Sox will join us here on WEEI Afternoons at 2:30. First of his weekly Wednesday chats throughout the entirety of the Major League Baseball season. So we're going to talk a lot of Red Sox. We're going to talk some Celtics. We're going to do all that. But we're starting with Stephon Diggs. The only downside to this signing, well, not the only downside, they could have done it at like 4 o'clock yesterday. It would have been nice if we could have done
all the big signings happen after our show.
It's not right. But Stephon Diggs, who is a little older, as I put on Twitter, is coming off a torn ACL and MCL and got a pretty nice contract for a guy of his age and his health status after his visit. Fitzy, IG following now matters. Unfortunately, I hate it. Googly eyes, IG following. We got to do all of that crap and pay attention to who's following who in social media, who followed who first.
Told you so. Hey.
I hate it.
Told you. 100%. You guys don't want to listen. Stiz told you. I told you. These things matter. He didn't just randomly decide, hey, you know what? I had such a good time there, even though I never met Drake May in person and just played a game across from him in which I scored a touchdown and spun the ball at the feet of the opponent's number one cornerback, who now I'm actually going to play with. They don't just do that for fun. Like, what a cool dude. Let me keep track of him. These little things matter. This is how it works in the day and age. You know, it's the, you know, it's like that's the social media equivalent of, you know, texting war plans.
As Jason Tatum himself says, Twitter is not real. So I choose to believe social media is not real. It's all this weird world of I don't know what. But let's get right to the poll, Fitzy, because I want to use this as a crowdsourcing opportunity.
My dad used to say the same thing when we went to
get
the
right
Foxy
to the
lady.
Poll. So on my Twitter account today, at Jumbo Hart, a place that's not real, I said, Patriots fans, how do you feel about New England signing Stephon Diggs? Because I wanted to try to get a barometer on the excitement, the questions, all of that. Because I took some heat for my tweet last night. But I said, first option, great. He's a true number one. Second option was, meh, he's the best wide receiver we got. And then third option was, yuck, he's a washed headache. Fitzy, do you want to guess what's winning right now? I know you like to play the game.
Let's see. Knowing the way, well, let's see. It's the show poll, but funneled through your followership, amplified by others. I'm going to guess that while most of us here believe it should be A, I'm going to go with B, not by a massive, but by a semi-significant margin.
Decent answer, because meh, he's the best we got, is leading the voting with 49% of the vote.
See?
Second, a very close second, is great, true number one receiver, 45% of the vote.
Ooh, that's on the way up, man. We got a little race there.
And then only 6% of the nearly 900 votes that have been cast say, yuck. He's a washed headache. So
he's not washed. Who the hell thinks this guy? He wasn't. How washed was he last year? Eight games in, when he was well on his way to over 100 catches and over 1,000 yards and eight touchdowns. Is that the regional definition of washed? Because Steph Diggs
before
on
his
one
knee exploded.
Leg, Steph Diggs on one leg, with the barbell and all the plates that he was squatting, or the chains in that IG video, is better than any wide receiver currently signed to the New England Patriots, now not named Steph Diggs. Get out of here, people! You're carrying a bias that belongs to when you hated that he would come in and point his fingers in the end zone and tell everyone what they could do to a certain part of his anatomy, which was not very nice. He was a Patriot killer, and just because. Ow, he's a locker room cancer. Ow, he's a bad culture guy. Ow, he grouses on the sidelines. You know what? He does a little bit of that. Sure, he is a pain in the ass, but guess what? He's a good pain in the ass for a team that lacks talent and needs motivation, especially in the wide receiver room. Come on.
So the place I would start is there's a lot of weeds to get caught up in if you want to get caught up in the weeds with age and injury and history and all of these things. But the reality is, and I did an exercise, Fitzy, I went through the NFL because you now have a number one wide receiver. How good of a number one wide receiver? We can debate. But I went through and compared Steph Diggs, because I think we could have argued before this move, you had the 32nd ranked number one wide receiver in the NFL.
And I think that's being generous.
And now I think you, at the very least, are in the high 20s. I came up with about 20 to 22 guys that I think are definitively better than Diggs at this point. But you jumped up a third of the NFL. And in a year in which you're going to battle with a guy that you want to be more cocky and more aggressive and more cocksure of himself and his team, Drake May, you now gave him a weapon. You now gave him a guy. You now gave him a... I watched Tom Brady for years, Fitzy. When it was on the line and the defense was doing good things, whether it be in practice or in games, you know what he often did? Where's Edelman? Edelman?
Yeah.
Where's Edelman? Now we now have an answer that Drake May can say, it is hitting the fan. Where's Diggs? I'm just going to throw to Diggs and hope, because I actually believe he will give me an opportunity to make a play as a quarterback and as an offense. So you have a number one wide receiver, something this team has been lacking for years, and it fills a massive need. In an ideal world, he's probably a two, right? In an ideal world, he's probably a number two.
He was a 1.5 last year, depending, kind of the two, because he was a two with a really good three behind him in Tank Dell. Collins was the one, but Nico Collins had a bad hamstring pull last year. So Diggs elevated to the one, amply played the part, no big deal for him, and then he tears his ACL, and there goes the Houston season.
Then it all bottomed out. Dan Ball?
He's a two on a championship-caliber team, but on a team that's scrounging to make the playoffs, he's a decent one.
Absolutely. And forget playoffs. Playoffs! Just forget playoffs. On a team that is trying to get a representative offense on the field for 2025. And we have...
Trying to score a point that's not a field goal or safety?
Yes, and okay. Trying to have guys that you can... I don't know, be a little bit excited about, put a little bit of faith in, put a little expectations on.
Somebody a defense actually has to game plan around instead of just dealing with.
And I don't know that Stephon Diggs is going to get back to his 100-catch, 1,000-yard ways. He might get back to the defense game plans for Stephon Diggs, and he makes Pop Douglas better. Maybe they double Stephon Diggs, and now Pop Douglas is the guy that's going to pile up 8 or 9 catches a game and be the volume target. But I can tell you, the job of Drake May, the job of Pop Douglas, and whoever else you want to put in there, Fitzy, I don't know who the other regulars are, if you want to put Mac Hollins or Jalen Polk or Javon Baker, Tayshaun Booty, all their jobs got easier. It's a little bit, he's not as good as Crochet, obviously, but it's like I feel about the Red Sox rotation. All the other starting pitchers' jobs got easier when Garrett Crochet walks into the clubhouse at Fenway Park. All the other wide receiver jobs just got easier at Gillette Stadium because Stephon Diggs is here.
Yeah, that's the main reason why I would have signed him. That's the number one reason why I wanted the New England Patriots to go after Steph Diggs. I would probably put it in an emergency power ranking, gold medal, what he's going to do to all your other receivers, followed closely a silver medal that was just nipped at the finish line of his actual on-field contributions. And then third, what he's going to do for the confidence of Drake May. which also was a bit of a photo finish as well. The manifold benefits of Stephon Diggs joining the New England Patriots are so much so that actually after the initial sticker shock of 3 years, $69 million, nice, $26 million, that's contractually obligated, folks, sorry about that, and $26 million guaranteed, I didn't think that that was too much money after all. Stop and look at it for a second. Like, whoa, that is way more than I thought he was going to get, because it felt like the Patriots were balking at 3 for 45 with Cooper Kupp in the Pacific Northwest. Turns out they weren't afraid to spend that kind of money, and Tom Curran's right. The Patriots don't like being called cheap, and they aren't cheap right now. They knew they needed to pay over and above and beyond whatever Steph Diggs, even on a bum or a rehabbing wheel, was worth, because they need someone to come in and challenge the wide receiver room to a metaphorical fight and say, all the catches are now running through me, you guys. So if you want Drake May to look your way, if you want Josh McDaniels to call you up as the primary target, then guess what? You're going to have to prove that you're better than me, whether I have two healthy legs, one and a half, or none. And then as far as what he does on the field, yeah, he's not the downfield threat he used to be, but he sure as hell is a pain in the ass to cover anywhere between 0 to 15 yards left, right, and center. And then for Drake May, yes, the volume monster that he can, hopefully, and will be with Drake May, that reliable target, like Blanket, Blanket, Steph's got to be out there someplace. If anybody legitimately believes that Drake May is soft enough, impressionable enough, or just, you know, like too nice enough, if you will, that a guy like Stephon Diggs would come in and mess up his personality or influence him negatively, then you must think that Drake May was softer than dog crap to begin with. That's not who he is, and don't worry about Steph Diggs turning him into a bad guy or being a negative influence on him. Come on now.
You acknowledged it. The $26 million guaranteed, I think, was eye-opening for me, because I thought once we started down the road of D-Hop got 1 year and $5 million in Baltimore, and Diggs being injured, Diggs coming to New England, Diggs not having a big market, I did not envision a contract this large. Now, we haven't seen the details yet, or at least I haven't, but there is definitely some backloaded to this. You know, it doesn't have to be a three-year deal.
Didn't we speculate 1 for 18 or 1 for 20, something like that, like a prove-it thing, and if he kicks ass, then he gets to go sign one more big deal in the NFL?
Well, sure. I mean, we need to wait and see, because, I don't know, if reporters are doing their jobs properly, he's getting $26 million. That's what the word guaranteed means. If he doesn't actually get $26 million from the New England Patriots, then I need to send Adam Schefter and others a dictionary with a highlighted word guaranteed. But so he got a lot of money. You know what I don't care about? That. Because we were bitching that they had $90 million in cap space. How do you still have the most cap space in the league and you don't have a wide receiver? Go overpay for Cooper Kupp. Go overpay for DK Metcalf. Go overpay for somebody. They overpaid for somebody. I think they overpaid for him. And I'm okay with that. Because that's, and whether you want to call it the suck tax, whether you want to call it desperation, painting yourself into a corner, this opens up a lot more opportunities in the draft. This opens up a lot more opportunities for the growth of the offense. And it also covers up. Do you remember how the show ended yesterday when we were reading texts about how great Mac Hollins was going to be? We had all these people, Mac Hollins is going to do this, Mac Hollins is going to do that. Can we stop talking about Mac Hollins now and just talk about Stephon Diggs, an actual NFL legitimate proven wide receiver?
Well, hold on. Mac Hollins is an NFL wide receiver. He has dozens of catches. He has over 50 catches in a season. That makes him NFL wide receiver to me. Now, the best part is everybody who thought, not only do I have to try to live up to my own expectations, but now I'm going to have to try to surpass him, because we don't have a number one target. We don't have a number two target. Nobody fears the New England Patriots passing attack. Well, now that Steph Diggs is here, everybody can just kind of go back to their lane, their role. Now Jalen Polk can just worry about holding on to the ball and being in the right place at the right time. Now Javon Baker can worry about getting onto the field. Now Mac Hollins can not have to worry about putting on shoes and wearing fun outfits. Like, everybody can be who they were supposed to be on the offense, because Diggs, even though he's not the biggest guy in the world, no one's going to confuse him with Calvin Johnson or Megatron or even Randy Moss, though we do always welcome distressed Minnesota wide receiver talents back here in New England, and they oftentimes work out pretty well. He's a strong enough man. He's a big enough personality. He's arrogant and confident and cocky. Yeah, these are all the things you want out of your number one wide receiver. He's not afraid to be the man. And look, Andy, if it works out and the New England Patriots win 8, 9, God forbid, 10 games this season, so long as they shore up that whole tackle thing on the left side, then guess what? Gone will be the stigma that New England is in the toilet. Gone will be people's fear of coming to Foxborough to watch their careers die. And vanquished will be the notion that nobody wants to play in Foxborough under Vrabel or with Drake again.
Yeah, I saw the 508. And if you want to shoot a text to the show, it's 617-779-7937. Also the number to call if you want to chat. We see you starting to line up here. But the 508 said, now NFL players want to come here. Now go get Travis Hunter. I don't know if this proves, quote unquote, NFL players want to come here. DK Metcalf didn't want to come here. Like, we can go back and forth, but you got a Pro Bowl caliber, all pro caliber name to sign the contract. And you didn't give him re-gosh darn ridiculous money. It's higher than I would have expected, but within the confines of your budget and your caps and all that, okay, you gave him a good paycheck and he took the money. And I'm guessing it was clearly his best opportunity on the open market. That's why he's here. But that's the way free agency works. That's the way business works. Whether this opens up the floodgates and now it's a more desirable place, I don't know. The best way to make it more desirable is if he goes out there and makes Drake May more desirable. And I'm with you, Fitzy. I don't have a single concern about Drake May. You know my theory from day one. Can't break a diamond. He's a diamond. He's a stud. He's a leader. He'll handle the wide receiver, the diva, the whatever, the volume, targets, fine. There's texters that are, oh, he's going to be forcing interceptions into double coverage. Okay, maybe he does. I don't think that'll be an issue. My actual, if you want to ask my concern of how the personality of Stephon Diggs could adversely affect the team, I guess it would be a little bit more with the young receivers. Because I actually think some of those guys showed a little dinkiness last year when they didn't even make any plays. And if he is making plays but being kind of a dink, they have this dysmorphia. They think they're actually good receivers. Maybe they feel like entitled to be more dinky. I don't think it's a huge issue, but I'm not sure he's the perfect guy to model young receivers after. But he's the perfect guy if you want him to run routes, right? Get open and
catch
the football.
He's the perfect guy to convince them that they need to up their game. I'm not worried about all of a sudden like Pop Douglas wanting to pursue dating a superstar or Kayshon Booty, you know, undoing all the good he did last year because he wants to be more like Diggs. This guy is going to teach these guys the way to do it and what works for him. They now have a resource. They have a free, they have someone they can check in, a big brother, if you will. They can check in with and be like, how do you get open against this kind of coverage? How do you often beat this type of guy? What is it that makes you so successful? What is your training regimen like? What is your workout? He's already posted more videos 6 months out from fixing his 5 months out, Andy, from rehabilitating his ACL than I've seen from all the other guys. Now, I know, you know, you can grab all those workout videos and throw them in the ocean because they mean nothing when it comes time to kick off in a real NFL football game. But this guy means
I was
going
to say lube them up and do what the Rock used to tell people to do with them. Yep, but, you know,
it's still two. It's a little early for that. but that's at least let me get a Gansett first. Yeah, no, the effect he's going to have on the other receivers, year one, so long as the Patriots go back to what I talked about yesterday in the three-point stance and make winning a priority, which it seems like they really have this year, then it's going to be great. And a little tease into my three-point stance today regarding how people feel about the New England Patriots going after Travis Hunter and getting Tet McMillan or Matthew Golden and all the top receivers. You may want to pump the brakes on that a bit.
And something, Andy, that you brought up a few times when we were talking about this potential was the culture and how maybe you were kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth. Well, now it's your time if you're Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels to prove it, that even if there is a little bit of dinkiness that's starting to bubble up, if you're as powerful and as culture-driven as you said, you should be able to shut that down.
Absolutely. Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels, Drake May. I have an affinity for all three of those guys and their ability to do their jobs. I don't think Stephon Diggs can undercut that. 617-779-7937. We'll be reacting all afternoon long to the Stephon Diggs signing. The Patriots have a number one wide receiver. Drake May now has a go-to guy, but we also have our own go-to guy here on Wednesday afternoons on WEEI Afternoons. Alex Cora, the manager of the World Series-bound Boston Red Sox, up next here with Fitzy and Hart and Dan Ball, who's about to be trending.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons. On the eve of opening day, the Boston Red Sox have flown from Mexico to Texas to get ready for the opener against the Rangers tomorrow. Be Garrett Crochet on the mound. And we are moments away from kicking off our regular season stint here with manager Alex Cora. Fitzy, did you happen to catch any of the second game of the two-game Mexican series last night, which, by all accounts, Lou, Dave O'Brien, Alex Speer, the players liked a lot more than I think they expected to like. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed it. They were talking about they arrived and there were like mariachi bands at the hotel and cervezas may or may not have been served, and they had a good time. It sounds like
just
it was
carbonated Mexican sports water. It's fine.
But, you know, like I wondered, because those international trips, I mean, Belichick whined about going to Mexico a few years back. And
then we got an awesome football game that had Tom Brady walking in like a conquering champion and Gostkowski hitting about a 90-yard field goal.
Yep. And it just sounds like they enjoyed this trip. Now, I don't know if it's ideal. If they let you plan your own season, would you choose to go to Mexico before you go to Texas from Florida and all that? And I think it was only like an hour or 20-minute flight for them from Mexico to get to Texas and get ready for opening day. So the buzz is real. We've taken the buzz international for your Boston Red Sox. And once I get over the T-Mobile patches that were way too big on their sleeves, I actually paid attention even more to it last night, Dan Ball, so don't roll your eyes at me. And
I didn't roll. I was laughing. You've fixated.
It literally like holds the sleeve open because it's too big and too stiff.
Well, that's where they got all the money that they could pay St. Bregman and others. So you know
what? I know.
If they have to NASCAR it up a little bit, then so be it. I'm okay with it.
It just didn't seem like there was thought put into it. It was like, hey, we got these massive T-Mobile patches. Why don't we just iron those on the sleeves and slap them out there and they'll be
T-Mobile's
fine.
T-Mobile's trying to show you they've got great coverage. They're covering the entirety of the Red Sox sleeve. They're covering the entirety of New England and beyond. Good for them.
And they aren't they the ones that they're the home run derby, right? They're everywhere.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. T-Mobile is very much in bed with Major League Baseball.
But I'll tell you what, there's nothing like broadcasting from a studio that's powered by Verizon.
Absolutely. Verizon is so much better. And as somebody who has had both, I can tell you Verizon is where it's at. You have more power when you're powered by Verizon. And that's what we are. Yes, yeah. Dan Ball.
Joint statement from the boys behind the glass. That T-Mobile patch is, I don't know what word you'd go with, Stiz. Mine is egregious.
Big?
Oh, so you're on, Stiz goes, big? I don't need a thesaurus. What am I, Chris Gasper? What am I going to call it, some big thing that somebody has to look? It's big.
It's
so
huge.
So you guys agree
okay,
with me.
Actually, hold on. I'll do it for you. Ostentatious.
Obnoxious. Yes, those all work. I'm glad you guys are all on board that it was just weird that they were
there's
oversized.
No way that's not at least a little annoying when you're when you're
right.
At bat.
Well,
at
it didn't seem to
pitching.
Bother the Red Sox. They scored an average of 11 runs the last two nights, you guys.
Well, they're playing inferior talent. That's not
okay.
Exactly
MLB by the way,
talent.
Dan Ball, can we confirm, was Marcelo Meyer forced to have his bat confiscated because it was deemed a weapon in Mexico? That guy couldn't stop hitting Andy. I can't wait to ask the manager about this momentarily. How badly does he want him up on the Red Sox now?
It seems like the timeline is shortening by the day. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like as soon as there's an injury, he has to be the first guy up. The only question becomes, what happens if he performs like this as a major leaguer? Then if you're Trevor Story,
trade him for a closer. I already started it yesterday.
But he doesn't have any value yet, Andrew.
Yes, he does. If he stays healthy and we're in mid-May and they're both raking and they're both looking like, wow, you trade Trevor Story in a package to get yourself a closer. We even had a texter yesterday with a backhanded compliment that was like, I can't believe I actually love the idea of trading Trevor Story for a closer. I'm telling you.
He's got 3 more years on his contract, assuming that he opts in after this year. I don't think anybody's
wait a
taking
second.
That.
Who's going to give you a brand new Honda for a Chevrolet that breaks down every 5,000 miles?
I do like a good Honda.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say it's a one for one. I'm not getting Mason Miller for Trevor Story. I'm just saying you could use him as part of a package when he proves himself healthy. It's not a massive contract. It's under $20 million, right? Or just about right at $20 million for an all-star shortstop who can play great defense, give you a little doubles machine at the plate.
So just to make sure I have this right, your idea is when Trevor Story gets hurt, Marcelo Meyer comes up, plays a great shortstop.
No. Marcelo Meyer comes up because he's playing so well. Then Trevor Story's also playing well. Meyer's getting some reps at third, at second, at short, and it's like, well, something's got to go. It's going to be Story. Line him up. Come get him. Come and get him, everybody.
I would love to live in your reality for at least a day.
It's fun. There's a lot of room in this big old head for ideas to just palm around.
Are we running with you being the little ball of hate from here on out in Boston sports?
I feel like I've been too optimistic to be the little ball of hate. I do like the nickname. It is a great nickname. And by the way, if you haven't voted yet, go to at WEEI Afternoons on Twitter, where our nickname bracket continues. Little ball of hate is up against somebody. I don't know. Brad Marchand.
Big Z.
Big Z.
We got a bunch of guff from people like, why'd you guys go with little ball of hate? You should have gone with nose face killer.
Okay, we could have, but you can't. I mean, there could have been a bunch.
The same people that were just like, how could you call? Why'd you go with the splendid splinter for Ted Williams? You should have gone with the kid.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, so apparently we had to have a play-in game. We had to have a play-in game for some guys to pick their nickname.
You should have gone to 64, you lazy bums.
I mean, is that what we picked them, and we went with it. I made the decision I'd do it again. I'm going back to my base.
That's for 2026. We'll do all the names we missed.
No, we are never doing nicknames again. We are dead and burying the nickname bracket after this season.
I'm in control.
You're damn right, except of when the guests call in, because I'm clearly not in control right now.
In fairness, Alex Cora was in Mexico. They are opening the season in Texas, which is on Central Time. So
multiple time zones have confused him with his Boston time. He didn't set it and forget it on his Apple Watch. Oh, no, he doesn't use Apple Watches. Strike that from the record.
Oh,
I forgot about
Andy,
that. Nope, we're not going there. That's for Jones.
Throw that
Keith.
In the garbage can and bang on
those
it while you're at it.
Those bullies in the midday, that's where they go. I also did learn something. Did you know Marcelo Meyer? I knew he had some Mexican descent. Did you know he holidays in Mexico? He spends Christmas or has spent Christmas in his life in Mexico. That's what
Mexico is also home to one of the destinations in the world I most want to visit. No, it is not Cancun. That would be Zihuatanejo. Of course, all of you Shawshank fans will know that is the beach scene from the emotional finale, which, by the way, was a reshoot.
Okay.
Just a little film.
I thought there was more story to that.
No, that was it.
Where's John McClane when I need him?
No, sorry.
That's really
such a great story. No, I just was adding that in, filling for time, because Alex Cora is not on the phone yet.
I've been to Mexico. It's a great place. I just wish there weren't some safety concerns at times.
I know. People talking about like, oh, yeah, we were in Cancun. They said, you know, stick to this and that and don't go too far away from base camp.
Because they found a bag full of heads outside the compound.
Well, no, I remember one time somebody said like, yeah, it was cool. We were on the highway going someplace. There was a Jeep full of like armed men going the other way. And they said, as long as we didn't bother them, it would be fine. Okay.
617-779-7937. We are less than 24 hours or about 24 hours away from opening day for the Boston Red Sox. We're talking Stephon Diggs. He's the newest member of your New England Patriots, and we will be talking to Alex Cora, fingers crossed, for the first time this year about the opening day efforts and his baseball team. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Two down, bottom nine, 12-8, Red Sox in Monterey. A pop-up should end it into shallow left field. Sogard calling off Eaton. He is there to make the play. Ball game over, spring training over. The Red Sox put on a show in Monterey. 12-8, the final. The kids did it all today. The Texas Rangers are next.
That was the final call last night. Red Sox exhibition game action. Closing out the spring before heading to Texas for tomorrow's season opener against the Rangers. Fitzy, they say there's no such thing as a dumb question, so I'm going to ask it.
Okay, go right. By the way, did you see who the Red Sox are opening against tomorrow?
The Rangers?
No, old pal Nate Eovaldi.
Oh, yeah, it's Eovaldi versus Crochet. Yeah.
That's freaking great theater for March 27th, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care who they're facing. It's going to be about Crochet for me. Crochet to go six innings. I want Crochet to have 13 Ks, and he gets
stop. I'm going to need a wet nap and a cigarette.
Throws it to the pen, and then they blow the lead, and they're 0-1.
It's 4-3, 4-3 Rangers in my mind, but I am going to love when he leaves the game up 3-1.
Yes, and that would be my lone real concern for this this baseball season. But what I was going to say is Monterey Jack Cheese from Monterey, Mexico?
I don't know that offhand.
I
was going to Google if you wouldn't mind doing radio for
guys,
a
moment.
No, I'm going to guess
bad
it's from
radio.
No, because it's not like any of the quesos that I'm familiar with in Mexico, so I'm going to guess it's from Monterey, California.
Oh, okay. No, I was just, you know, wondering, because sometimes I put Monterey
Jack. Actually, I believe
on a taco.
It was named after the cowboy Monterey Jack.
I really wish Alex Cora would call. No, we are prepared for situations like this. I actually had Dan Ball get together some projections for the season earlier last week, I guess. And we wanted to get some of these underway. Because, Fitzy, if you remember when we talked about that stupid projection by Baseball Reference that Crochet was going to pitch like four games and win nothing.
Oh, my God. They had him winning six games, Andy.
Yeah, stupid.
And by the way, real quick, Thank God we live in a day and age where you can get an answer to any question in 2 seconds or less. Monterey Jack Cheese, named for David Jacks, a businessman who was one of the first to widely sell and distribute the cheese in the late 1800s, which was from the Monterey Alta, California neighborhood.
Oh, okay. So it is a Californian cheese from our friend Jack, who got the idea to sell it. What a wise businessman he was. Anyway, Dan Ball. Let's get to some of your projections that you've dug up. So,
nailed it.
Much like we do in this world when we don't like the information a certain source gives us, we look for a different source. So we didn't like Baseball References projections. Where did you get these?
This is from FanGraphs.
Okay.
So specifically, it's an acronym ZIPS with two I's. I don't know what it translates to, but it's full blown projections for the season.
Like
so,
George Zip?
I bet it's player projections on the back end.
Probably, but...
What starts with a Z?
I'm going to have to let you get back to your segment because we have something that's about to come through the phone line in just one moment. I'll give you the Crochet number real quick.
Okay.
He is projected from this model 12-6, 2.93 ERA in 29 games started this season.
Okay, much better than what we saw. Joining us on the phone lines now is the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. Alex Cora is brought to you on WEEI Afternoons by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex Cora, appreciate you joining us. Andy Hart here alongside Nick Fitzy Stevens. Are you excited for the baseball season to get underway tomorrow?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think, the off season we executed what we wanted to. Spring training was solid. I think the two games in Monterey were awesome. Kind of like change of pace, getting out of the routine. And now we're here in Dallas, ready to go.
Yeah, Alex, the excitement here in our studio at the station and throughout Red Sox Nation has been palpable the last couple of months. And I think it's because of the offseason that the Red Sox have had and the optimism continues to grow. So I just wanted to ask you, what did it mean to you to see the front office be so proactive and aggressive this offseason, addressing the needs of defense, a starter like Crochet, and so much more for you?
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot. I made a commitment with the organization halfway through the season last year after talking to John, Tom, Mike, and Bress, that we were going for it, right? As an organization, we did a good job. I like, developing players and getting better the last few years. And we executed, like I said before. We got some guys in that room. They're proven winners. Crochet obviously comes from a tough situation last year, but we know the talent. But you talk about Walker, you talk about Alex, and all they know is playing October baseball, right, and be successful. So we're in a good spot. It's just being in spring training, it was a different vibe. Even being in the city in January up there, when we were recruiting Alex, I was telling him that, the talk of the town was him, right? Like, everybody was talking about Alex Bregman, and I'm glad that he's with us. So it's a little bit different than the last 3 or 4 years, and now it's time for us to go out there and perform.
I think a big part of the buzz is the obvious trade for Garrett Crochet. We've lived in this town, Pedro and Schilling and Josh Beckett, aces, what they mean to a baseball team. Do you think Garrett Crochet is ready for that ace workload? I mean, he didn't start his first major league game until last year, and now he's the opening day starter with a lot of expectations for a World Series contender. So is he ready for that job?
I mean, we're about to see, but physically he is. This guy is a monster. He's big and strong, and the way he goes about his business in the training room, in the weight room, is ace-like, right? But now, obviously, we got to go out there every 5 days and prove it. We're going to let him go. That's, the expectations are 30-plus starts and help us, win as many games as possible. And I truly believe physically he's different than others. You know, I joke with Sal about that. I compare him with Sal, but he's stronger, right? And and Chris actually agree with that. But you'll see him. You know, he's ready to go. And it's just a matter of, we have to be smart about it, too. You know, the way the season starts, there's a lot of games early on. Then the schedule actually benefits us from June, July, and August. So we'll take care of him. And if we do that, he's going to take care of us.
Alex, obviously so much has been made, like you said, in a positive way about Alex Bregman coming to town. He's already a hero here, and he hasn't even swung the bat yet in a Red Sox uniform. At
Saint Fenway. Bregman, we call him. Saint
we're
Bregman.
Calling him Saint Bregman. Like the man can, he turns water into beer at Fenway. Like we're expecting great things this year. But you know, obviously he's going to, looks like he'll be the starting third baseman for the team. So Raffy moves to DH, and I just wanted to know, you know, where things are with Raffy heading into the season. We know where he's going to be in the lineup, but where is he in the best place he can possibly be in his head right now to be successful? Because when he's going right, there may be no better left-handed bat in the AL.
I believe so. We had conversations throughout spring training, and, you know, he was very vocal about how he felt. And, you know, we made a decision. Alex is going to play third. Raffy's going to DH. And we all are in the winning business, and he understands that. You know, it's like everything, right? You don't have to agree with it, you know, but at the end of the day, what are we going to do to go out there and perform every single day? And he's been working hard, not only with his swing, but the routine, of course, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, but somebody mentioned, can he do it? You know, like, you know what? Every DH used to be a position player until there were DHs, right? JD went through the same transition. In 2018, he was an outfielder. He became a DH, and you saw what happened. So we expect the same thing. The kid is ready to go. He's going to hit second against lefties and righties, and he's going to DH. And I think having Alex behind him is going to benefit him. And, you know, honestly, I expect a great season from Raffy offensively.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora joining us here on WEEI Afternoons, as he will all season long on Wednesday afternoons. Alex, you've been in the media. You know how this job works. You've been in Boston for a long time. We can talk about all the positives and the upsides and blow smoke up your butt here. If I were being honest with you, I think the biggest question mark might be the bullpen. You know, we had an idea who we thought the closer might be, and now it seems like that plan has changed. What do you think of the closer situation, and is that a concern for you?
No, I think, you know, the way Chapman has thrown the ball, he earned it, right? But at the same time, we're not going to pin ourselves in certain series, right? Especially the first two, you know, Texas and Baltimore, you know, they're left-handed hitters. So if there's a pocket in the eighth that is Seager, you're going to see Chapman there. I don't know the situation with Baltimore, but, you know, if Henderson is leading out the eighth, you're going to see Chapman. But most of the time, he's going to pitch the ninth. We have to figure a few things out. We need consistency from some other guys, right? We try to, you know, address that throughout the offseason. Having Whitlock helps. Obviously, Slayton healthy is going to help. Justin Wilson is a good pitcher. He can get lefties and righties out. But, you know, the Kellys and Weiser, they need to do the job, because you cannot only rely on your on Slayton and Chapman and Wilson, right? There's going to be days that they're going to have to pitch the seventh and the eighth, and we expect them to perform. You know, I think that was something that happened last year, right? Like, if you look at our stats or our season, you know, we blew 30-plus saves, and it's not in the ninth, only in the ninth, right? It's from the sixth inning on, and we have to be better in that aspect.
Obviously, excitement for the guys that were with the team, guys that have recently joined the team, and what about the guys that soon may join the team? What do you think are, like, realistic expectations in 2025 for the mighty rookie triumvirate? You got one making the club in Christian Campbell, and then you have Marcelo Meyer swinging a bat the last couple of nights and all spring long, Alex, just like he's itching to get up there, and Roman Anthony's no slouch either. So how are we going to handle this situation?
As you guys know, and this is the way I made it to the big leagues, right? People got hurt and hurt and hurt, and they're like, Alex, you're going to the big leagues, you know? It's not that I earned it. It was just by default, right? With them, they're going to let us know, to be honest with you. You saw what happened in Monterey, just the stage, 22,000 people, And especially in the case of Marcelo, right? Like, I mean, I was joking with people. I was like, in the beginning, the Mexican kids were calling him Marcelo, Marcelo. At the end, it was like, Marcelo, Marcelo, you know? Like, he said, oh, he's Mexican, actually. But the at-bats are getting better, and the defense is real. With Roman, I don't know how many walks he took in Mexico, but it's a professional bat, quote-unquote. You know, I know it's a cliche, but it's really a good one. So they'll go to Worcester. We talked to them over the course of the week. You know, they feel they're ready, but there's a few things that obviously, you know, they got to go down there. And the roster, right? Like, we have a pretty good big league roster, but it's going to be a case of when, right? And they're going to contribute. They're going to play hard. They're going to do everything right. They're going to perform. And at one point during the season, I truly believe they're going to help us win bowl games at the big league level.
Clearly a big part of the top of your order is Tristan Casas, kind of had the lost season with the injury a year ago. And then Craig Breslow opened some eyes when he threw numbers out there, projections of Casas being a 40 home run, 120 RBI guy. You're laughing, but are those pie in the sky numbers, or is that something we as fans should say, yeah, that's attainable, we should pencil that in?
We need him to play, right? We need him to keep him healthy. That's the most important thing. Throughout his career, he's been hurt, you know, and he's been off the field. So the more he plays, the better he's going to be. I truly believe that spot, that pocket in the lineup is going to be a good one. Bregman, Casas, you know, we're going to let Jaron do his thing, Rafi do his thing. Alex and Tristan, they're going to slow down the game, right? They're going to take pitches. They're going to take their walks, and that's very important. Numbers-wise, man, 40 and 120 sounds great, you know, but I think 150 games from him, that's what I want. The rest of the thing, he'll take care of that.
And Alex, you know, it's interesting to see that the Patriots and the Red Sox are both so active in the offseason trying to get back to where they were, both teams winning championships in 2018. I wanted to ask, any relationship with Mike Vrabel? Obviously, you were on the Red Sox around the same time that he was on the Patriots playing for Super Bowls, winning World Series. I know you have had relationships with previous coaches and GM, so what's the vibe like with Vrabel?
No, not yet, but I think everybody in the city, right, they're liking what they're doing. For what I know, very professional, very specific in his job, right? You know, I joke around, Brad and Joe have put pressure on us now. You know, like, they have probably the best basketball team in the league, you know, and they're putting pressure on the Red Sox and the Patriots and everybody else to step up and do the things that they've been doing the last few years.
Before I let you go and you get the marathon season underway, when I ask you to look around the American League East and the American League overall, what do you see? What's the landscape look like?
It's really good. You know, they have the pitching offensively. With Santander, you have Bo, you got Vladdy, you got Santander. That's a different lineup than last year. Obviously, we know what Baltimore can do. The Rays in a different environment. You know, Yandy Diaz is going to have a monster season hitting the ball to right field in that stadium. You know, that's how he lives. So it's going to be a grind from day one. Detroit has a really good team. We saw them in spring training. And obviously, you know, their third base coach is the greatest ever. You know, so I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough, but we're ready for the challenge. We have a pretty good baseball team. We just have to take care of the ball. I think that's the most important thing. We play good defense. We're going to play meaningful games in September.
All right, Alex, we're looking forward to tomorrow, opening day, getting the season underway, and we're looking forward to every Wednesday and talking to you about this season that has as much buzz as we can remember in half a decade around here. So good luck tomorrow. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy.
Thank you. You too,
Thanks,
Alex.
That was Red Sox manager Alex Cora here on WEEI Afternoons. Up next, Ted Johnson in the house, 3-point stance time, and we'll talk about some of the things that Alex Cora said. All next in hour number two, WEEI Afternoons.